Look who's popped into the studio. The leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, Mike Nesbitt. Good morning.
Good morning. How nostalgic. I spent a lot of time in this studio when I presented Good Morning Ulster.
Where did it all go wrong?
Different days.
I was going to tell you off for good being morning. Slightly late, but I'd be the last man in the country to be able to do that, right?
Well, I'm not used to coming into the city centre first thing. And
it's crazy, isn't it?
Pretty heavy.
Yeah, absolutely yeah. Crazy.
I was told to be here at 10 past for 20 past, and it's 9:17.
You should blame the minister. For roads.
Good morning.
Danny Kennedy. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm very good.
You're proud of this manifesto. You're sitting in front of me here. Yes. Ulster Unionist Manifesto, one day, one vote, one chance for change.
That's easy for you to say.
Yeah, one chance for change.
Finney would have got that right.
Why aren't you putting him in front
Finney's very good.
He's off this week. Mm. Why aren't you putting him in front of all the people of Northern Ireland?
The manifesto is in front of all the people of Northern Ireland. You're referring, I presume, to the fact we're standing in 15 of the 18 constituencies.
Yeah.
You know, I want to maximise the number of pro-union MPs who were returned on the 8th of May. One of the national newspapers today is talking about 10 days to save the union. The result on the 8th of May could see 40, 50, 60. It's actually possible, I think, that 10% of all MPs will be separatists, abstentionists, non-pro-union members of parliament. That's unprecedented. So it's a very uncertain time for the union, and I believe in the union. I believe it's a good thing for everybody, economically, culturally, socially.
But why not have more confidence in yourselves rather than giving the DUP a free run in two constituencies?
Well, I wanted a free run in Fermanagh because I think for a long time unionism, irrationally actually, is on the back foot. It's not on the front foot. It's not confident. So I was looking about a year ago, Stephen, what would be a good sign for unionism? What would give people a bit of a lift? And something that would give people a lift would be to win back Fermanagh South Tyrone, which used to be a unionist seat, was lost because the vote was split. And for a number of years, there hasn't been full representation at Westminster because they have an abstentionist MP. And that was what I went looking for, and that's what I got.
Do you not care about the people in East and North Belfast just as much? Have they no chance for change?
They'll have a chance for change next year when we will stand candidates for the Assembly. I had to do something to secure the right to have a go at Fermanagh. And if you split the unionist vote, you don't get a unionist MP there. And I proposed a deal that included Fermanagh and North Belfast, where the sitting MP is under huge threat from an abstentionist party.
But are you better than Peter Robertson's crowd?
Well, that's for the electorate to decide. I think we're different, and that's why we have our manifesto and they have theirs. The understanding we have is only about trying to maximise the number of pro-union MPs who go to Westminster. But after that, when you're into social policies, you're looking at significantly different parties.
But the difficulty with these electoral pacts is that, for example, in North and East Belfast, you're saying, vote for our mates up the road, vote for the DUP, they're a good party.
I'm saying vote for a pro-union MP, that is better than an abstentionist MP or an MP who is not pro-union, particularly at this time. We've come through decades where the IRA tried to bomb and shoot us out of the union to try and break up the union by breaking off Northern Ireland. They failed. We're now in a position where, politically and legitimately, Scottish separatists pose a greater threat to the future of the union.
You really think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
You think the union's under threat?
What if 40 or 50 SNP MPs go down to London and it's a hung parliament? What negotiating position does that put them in?
So do you think the union is under threat?
I think the union is under some threat. I think that a recalibration is inevitable, and partly that has already been started through the Smith Commission coming after the independence vote in Scotland. Also, if you look at the command paper coming out of Westminster about further devolution in England, there is going to be a recalibration. I don't think we should look at that as a threat. That is an opportunity for Northern Ireland. It's an opportunity I think we should take by changing our political mindset. I have been I've been quite surprised since I've been elected a few years ago up at Stormont at the fact that we are almost obsessed with being dependent, not least on the block grant. Yes, we need a block grant, but would it not make more sense if we actually, instead of saying to ourselves we are dependent, said, I tell you what, we're going to generate our own serious wealth for all our people, so that we can become less dependent on the block grant?
Is it not patronising the people on benefits when you talk about a culture of dependency on welfare?
That's political. That's nothing to do with the people who are on benefits. That's about the political mindset.
I want our politics to switch from a culture of dependency on welfare.
Yes.
What is the culture of dependency on welfare? Spell that out. What is it?
We have spent the last 2 years debating welfare. We need to do it and move on because the vulnerable need protected, but so do other people.
Debating welfare isn't the same as
it's a political mindset.
Being dependent on it. Who's dependent on it?
What I'm saying is we have a political mindset which is focused on dependency.
What is the culture of the dependency and welfare?
It's a mindset.
Who are you talking about?
Politicians. The politicians at Stormont.
Politicians are dependent on welfare?
No, we have a dependency culture. The mindset is we have to rely on welfare to look after our people. We have to rely on the block grant to look after our people. I'm suggesting we don't have to do that exclusively. We can actually start generating serious wealth, which will be good for our people.
But people who are on welfare are entitled to it.
Of course they are.
That's not a culture of dependency.
No, you're misinterpreting. You're misunderstanding, Stephen. I believe in the welfare state. I believe in protecting the vulnerable. The Ulster Unionist Party, if you go and check the records up at the Stormont, were the first party to bring forward amendments to reshape welfare reform as it came out of Westminster to the benefit of our people. For example, not bringing forward the bedroom tax. We were the first party to say formally through an amendment, we do not want to have the bedroom tax in Northern Ireland because we don't think it is a sensible or a fair way to administer welfare.
You also want to switch from our dependency on the block grant.
Yes.
What's the alternative to the block grant?
Generating serious wealth is the alternative to the block grant. Now, we'll still always need a block grant. But, you know, 25 years ago, it was 1.5 billion. 10 years ago, it was 6 billion. Today, it's over 10 billion. That's not a speed or direction of travel that anybody should welcome. Why don't we start generating our own wealth? In terms of the prosperity...
By cutting the block grant?
No, by not being dependent on it, by generating our own wealth.
But why aren't you fighting for us to get as much of a share of the block grant as possible? That's what the First Minister of Wales has been doing.
That is not a contradiction to what I am saying. What I am saying is let's generate our own wealth. That puts us in a much more stable position. And in fact,
but you're not exactly
in our manifest,
fighting for more money by saying we're too dependent on it.
I'm saying that is not a good place to be. Do you think it is good for you if you are totally dependent on loans from your bank or whoever gives you your finances? Would you not rather be in a position where you've generated your own wealth and you have money in the bank?
But that grant isn't a loan, Mike Ness, but that grant is money that Northern Ireland is entitled to.
Yes, it is.
And actually maybe people would want to hear from a politician like you saying we're going to fight for even more.
I will fight for more if that's what we need. But what
you
I'm
won't.
Saying is, in
you
the parallel,
you think we're too dependent on it.
Yes, I do think we're too dependent on
it. Music to the Treasury's ears, isn't it? To your old mates in the Tory party.
Stephen, I really think you are just doing this for the sake of trying to start an argument.
I'm not.
Why wouldn't we want to generate wealth? Do you not want the politicians of Northern Ireland to generate wealth for the people?
Of course we would want to generate wealth, but
and if you
people
generate
listening to this programme this morning might want to hear you saying, especially in a climate where they're trying to cut the amount of money that comes into Northern Ireland, might want to hear someone like you saying, you know what, I'll fight to my last breath for the money coming into Northern Ireland.
If we generate wealth, people are better off. People will pay more taxes. More taxes means you can grow your public sector, or you can enhance the quality of the services of your public
sector.
Does
the block grant not generate wealth in a way in itself?
Well, it does, yes, because it puts money into the system. But why not? Why not generate our own wealth? And that is why at this time in 20... I've just said that. Now you're arguing my case for me. What I'm saying is generate wealth, and the key policy lever is the one we proposed in 2010 in the general election, setting our own rate of corporation tax. Now, that could generate at 12.5%, if the Republic stays at 12.5% and GB stays at 20%, that could generate 35,000 to 40,000 jobs.
Let me move on from the block grant in 1 second. Just one last question. What if we're too dependent on it, how much should it reduce by so that we're at a reasonable
that's
share?
That's how long is a piece of string. We should generate as much wealth as possible. And to generate, say, 35,000 to 40,000 new jobs... New well-paid jobs would be fantastic.
But no one would disagree that we should try to create wealth.
Yes.
But what is a reasonable level for our block grant? It should reduce to what so that we're not...
There isn't a figure. I don't have a figure in mind. I'm saying it's aspirational. You know, there was a time when we were net contributors to the UK Treasury where we didn't need a block grant, but that was before we had a health service, that's before we had pensions. We cannot get back to that position, but if we aspire to it, the effort will be good for our people. Now, there's a prosperity gap, Stephen. And put simply, if you are a citizen of England, Scotland and Wales and you have £1 in your back pocket, our citizens have 77p. Why don't we aspire to close that prosperity gap, to make our people more prosperous? And if they are, they will be healthier. And if they're healthier, they'll be happier.
How are you going to do that? How are you going to create this wealth?
Corporation tax is the single biggest policy lever. It was our idea. It was one we promoted this time at the last general election. There are two other policy levers that we have in the manifesto that we would like to see, and they're both concessionary value-added tax rates. One is for the construction industry. We would like to follow the lead that the Isle of Man set a few years ago by having a 5% VAT rate on the repair, maintenance and improvement of existing dwellings. The experience of the Isle of Man is that it is very, very good for the economy. We've seen as recently as last week with the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors that the construction industry is still pretty flat. There's still a lot of people going from here over to England to find work. We think a 5% rate across the UK would be very good.
Oh, not
for
so,
us.
So not for Northern Ireland alone, across the
that
UK?
That one would be across the UK because so many of our construction workers work across the UK, in England, Scotland and Wales, so they will get the benefit. The other one is Northern Ireland specific, and it's in the same way that we want a 12.5% rate of corporation tax because of competing across the land border with the Republic. Hospitality suffers by having 20% in accommodation where the Republic of Ireland have 9. So we'd like to match that 9%. That would be Northern Ireland specific because if you put it UK-wide, you would be competing against hotels in England, Scotland and Wales.
How much would that cost off the block grant?
Cutting the VAT rate on construction to 5%.
Well, that's UK wide.
Yeah.
That wouldn't affect hospitality.
Hospitality. The only figures I've seen, which are, I think, from Oxford Economics, say if you don't do it, you're costing our local economy 100 plus million per annum.
So you haven't costed it?
Oxford Economics have done a cost on
that's
that.
That's for not doing it. How much would it cost to do it?
It's impossible to figure those out. You have to run various models, how many people are going to avail of it.
So you don't know if it's doable or not?
It is doable. Of course it is doable. And it doesn't come off the block grant. It's VAT.
So in this time of austerity, you know it's doable, but you don't know how much it would cost Stormont.
It depends how many people. You would have to run various models. You know that.
Have you not run them?
No.
Why not?
Because it is a proposal that we are putting forward. And it would not come off the block grant. It would come off VAT.
You see, because we've spent the first, I guess, 10, 15 minutes talking about most questions that I asked you, Mike. You said that it's all about generating wealth. Mm-hmm. And here's one of the policy issues where you're saying we can generate wealth in the hospitality sector. It's not costed.
Well, it wouldn't be coming off the block grant. So there is no cost to the Northern Ireland Executive, but there is a benefit to the Northern Ireland Executive.
So the Treasury would give it to us for free? This part of the UK for free and nowhere
else.
There would
be a cut. Yeah, well, there would be a cut in the VAT take. Yes, there would. But what you would do then is you would generate more visitors and you would boost the tourism industry.
So it doesn't come off the block grant. It would come off the VAT take separately. Does Stormont get a VAT take separately?
No, we don't take a VAT take separately. That's why I don't think it would impact our finances.
Corporation tax being reduced to 12.5% by 2017. How doable is that? How much would that cost us?
Well, the price is going to be in the low hundreds of millions. The model is being run. It is being discussed by the five parties of the executive in terms of the Stormont House implementation group. We're looking very closely at the exact costs. The latest information is that it wouldn't be a single hit. That it would actually come in over a period of 2 to 3 years, which makes it much more doable.
But low levels of hundreds of millions, what does that mean?
That means it could cost 200 million, 250 million, but you're talking about over the space of 2 to 3 years. If we go for it, now it is our proposal, it's not an agreement among the five parties. Our view is that we should go to 12.5%, and we've changed our opinion on that, by the way. We also believe we should do it at the first available opportunity, which is the 1st of April 2017. But if we're going to do that, we must make the decision very soon to give Invest Northern Ireland the time to go out and bring in and get on the ground the new foreign direct investors and speak to the Indigenous and local companies who will be thinking about expansion because they can now ploy their profits back into the company.
It's in your manifesto to do it, as you just said, by 2017, by April 2017. That's actually less than 2 years away now because we're nearly in the May.
Yeah.
And it's not costed?
Not to the last penny.
Well, you know, millions, you're saying. Low hundreds of millions.
And then I went,
200, 300, 400?
I said 200 to 250 a minute ago.
Where are we getting it from?
It comes off the block grant, and what you have to do is bring in new businesses so that the take goes up as the rate comes down.
So it's a gamble?
I'm not sure it is a gamble. If you speak to Invest Northern Ireland, they've got some pretty solid figures about companies who are already queuing up, ready to come in if that announcement is made. And then the potential is fantastic. I was in the United States in March speaking to some business people. Their rate of corporation tax in the United States is 35%. So 12.5% is incredibly attractive to them.
Incredibly attractive to the big companies in Northern Ireland too. I guess the banks, the big multi-million pound companies, would they get a cut in corporation tax?
I would like to think that we would find a mechanism that would exclude them and that it would be the fairest way possible to implement this tax. But what we're talking about...
Is it legal to do that? To exclude certain companies based in Northern Ireland?
Well, that will depend on the European Union because all these things have to be done within European Union rules. And there's an Azores ruling where the island of Azores got its own corporation tax separate from the national state parliament. So these things are still matters to be negotiated out.
Is it legal to actually target certain companies within Northern Ireland?
That needs to be tested. I've just said that needs to be tested with the European Union. In fact, anything we do has to finally be sanctioned by the European Union.
But has your party sought legal advice as to whether it is likely to pass the legal test?
This is being done by the five parties together in terms of the implementation group of the Stormont House Agreement, so it's not up for us or any individual party to make that call.
And what's the legal advice say so far?
The legal advice so far says that we are on course to bring in corporation tax at the rate that we decide, on the date that we decide to bring it in.
That wasn't the question, though. What does the legal advice say so far about excluding certain companies in Northern Ireland from this corporation tax cut?
That discussion has not yet been had.
But you're going to implement this within 2 years.
Yes. And what we need to do is agree around the table the date and the rate. Our proposal is 12.5% and our date is the 1st of April 2017.
So you would exclude the banks from this corporation tax cut. Would you exclude, I don't know, if McDonald's set up a head office in Northern Ireland, would you exclude them?
Oh, you can't have the brass plating. We've already, that's not going to happen. You're not going to have a company who's going to set up an office with a brass plate and two people sitting answering the phone and saying we're funneling all our money through Northern Ireland so that we can avail of a lower corporation tax than we get in Liverpool, Manchester, Birmingham.
What about the likes of Tesco's, for example, who trade here? Would they get a cut in corporation tax?
Well, don't forget, the current corporation tax, there's a small business corporation tax, there's a big business corporation tax. So there is a precedent. There is a precedent for having differentials between these various companies.
So this is only, this corporation tax cut would only, because this is, I guess this is one of the pillars of your economic policy. Would this only apply to small business?
No, it wouldn't only apply to small business. But you're going into a lot of fine detail that follows through.
Because this is starting in less than 2 years.
And that's plenty of time. If you make the initial decision as the five parties of the executive that this is exactly what we're going to do, then you move on into the fine detail of that. And the model that has been run by InvestNI and their advisors suggests that 12.5% for us, if it's 12.5% still in the Republic and 20% in GB, will generate potentially 37,500 new jobs. That is transformational, not just for those people and their families and their communities. It's transformational for Northern Ireland.
You see, the reason that I've pushed you on whether you would give a corporation tax to some of the big companies. It's obvious, because there would be a certain public backlash against that. And so you've said that you may look at some of the big companies not getting it. But the reality is, of course, that it might be the big companies that could bring in the most jobs to Northern Ireland. So it might be a tough political decision to give it to them, but they might bring in the big jobs.
Well, I'm not sure that they would, because if you look at the banks, you know, they are closing branches because the nature of banking is changing and it is much more electronic and it's much more online.
Big IT companies.
Yes, big IT companies, yes. Back office law firms, we're doing a lot of that. And one of the issues we have is not corporation tax. It's the fact that a lot of them want to base themselves in Belfast and they want A-class office accommodation. They want the best office accommodation possible. They don't want factories because they're not manufacturing anything. And we have run out of A-class office accommodation.
The manifesto also says you would expect any company benefiting from the 12.5% rate of corporation tax to pay the living wage from April 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, we support the principle of the living wage, but given the Northern Ireland economy is constituted almost exclusively by micro and SMEs and small and medium enterprises for whom the living wage would represent an existential threat.
Yeah.
So which is it?
It's both. Because
force them to pay the living wage?
No. We say clearly there that we're not for imposing the living wage, because it says, and it's in the manifesto as well, 99.9% of our private sector is made up of micro and SMEs. Now, the current minimum wage is £6.50. If you impose the living wage of £7.85 on all of them, some jobs will go. Some companies will close because they can't afford it. And currently,
you would expect any company to do it.
Let me finish this out. Some jobs will go and some companies will close because they can't afford to go from £6.50 per hour per employee to £7.85. But if you are paying corporation tax, you are making a profit. And if you are making a profit, there is an expectation, a reasonable expectation, that you can afford to go from £6.50 to £7.85.
I'm just totally confused. You say you would expect companies to do it.
Yes. You can't legislate for it.
What's expect mean?
What do you mean, what does expect mean?
You say in your manifesto you would expect any company to pay the living wage.
I would expect them to. I would.
And then you say it's a threat to companies in Northern Ireland.
No, it's a threat to companies that aren't making a profit. If you impose it on...
It's not what you're saying.
It is what we're saying. We're saying if you impose the living wage, then you have to pay it whether you're making profit or not. And if you're not making profit, your company could go bust. It could be the tipping point. In the same way that the re-evaluation of rates is proving to be a tipping point and an existential threat at the moment.
None of this is mentioned in your manifesto. What it does say in your manifesto is that you would expect any company benefiting from the 12.5% rate of corporation tax to pay the living wage.
And you will not benefit from the 12.5% of corporation tax unless you are making a profit.
Okay, so to clear this up, any company making a profit would have to pay the living wage.
We would expect to pay the living wage, and the pressure to do so will come from trade unions, the Nolan Show, the community, because it will be well known if companies are not paying.
Why are you saying expect rather than saying we would force companies? Why is it not a harder policy? Expect is political language, which is wriggle room, and there is contradiction.
What's the difference between expect and we would want?
Well, no difference. What's the difference between expect and we would require?
Because we cannot require in legislation.
Why not?
You can't do it. We're trying to bring down. We're trying to bring the corporation tax down to 12.5% to generate tens of thousands of jobs. What we're saying is that the minimum wage isn't good enough. It's currently £6.50. It has not kept up with inflation. If you bring it up with inflation, our research says it should currently be £6.92. We think companies should be required to pay that. We should bring up the minimum wage to £6.92. That is fair. In terms of the spirit of what was intended there.
Let's move on to health, will we? You promised for hospitals we'll extend evening and weekend consultant coverage. Mm-hmm. You also say we will reverse the trend of Northern Ireland having the lowest number of GPs per head in the UK. Pretty big commitments.
Yeah.
How much does it cost to extend evening and weekend consultant coverage?
It doesn't necessarily cost anything if you look at a revised workforce planning structure. if you or I present at an acute hospital at, say, 5 o'clock on a Thursday, and we require a scan, it is likely that we'll get the scan and we could be cleared and back home on Thursday night. At the same time on a Friday, it is more likely that we are going to be kept in through to Monday morning. So we're going to spend a couple of nights at several hundred pounds a night in a hospital bed unnecessarily. That's where the money is freed up.
But getting consultants to work different hours than their current working pattern, good luck with that one.
Well, have
is
they
this
got,
in their contract?
Have they got a conscience? Do they understand that the health service is sick, that it needs to be fixed? Do they understand that we need to do better in terms of our society and that the health service is the jewel in the crown of the United Kingdom?
You're asking if they've got a conscience?
I know many who do. I know many who
would be prepared. You're suggesting some don't?
I'm saying I know many who would be prepared to look at a different regime. And what we're talking about is changing.
They've got family commitments, Mike, like other people.
Yeah, we all do. And we all work weekends. Well, many of us who have the opportunity take up the opportunity to work weekends.
And so the consultant contracts at the moment, that would allow them to be forced to work weekend, would it?
It wouldn't allow them to be forced to work weekends. We are talking about a new revised workforce planning structure.
Okay.
That's how we see it happening. And we don't see it necessarily costing money, as I've explained about unnecessary overnights.
That. You would impose that?
I would rather negotiate it.
And if they say no?
Well, that's you're going into the post-match analysis. Let's see how we get on in a constructive engagement.
Wishy-washy nonsense, isn't it? You'd rather negotiate it. Would you impose it or not? Is there anything
hard
about you?
Are you stalling to think of a new question?
Is there anything not hard about you? Would you just negotiate everything or would you actually say, do you know what? We'll impose it.
How do you impose it?
Well, then why is it in your manifesto? All they've got to do is say no.
No, it's not all they have to do is say no. I'm a bit more optimistic about human nature than you are, Stephen.
Really?
Yes.
So you expect them to say yes, and if they don't, that's all right then?
No, I think in the first instance, we can negotiate a new workforce planning structure, which will be more reasonable, which will allow for a more 24/7 type of operation for the health service, if you excuse the pun, which everybody recognises is one of the game changers that is required. And that's just in terms of acute hospitals.
Reverse the trend of Northern Ireland having the lowest number of doctors, GPs, per head in the UK. How many more doctors would we bring into Northern Ireland?
I would like to see us benchmarking against the best of the NHS UK-wide, and that's places like Bedford and Luton and some of those trusts, and they're easily identifiable and the benchmarking can be very easily achieved.
How many are we short per head?
I can't tell you the exact figure, but it's a per head of population. That, you know, there are more people attending the single GP here than there are in the best areas of England.
Is it significant? Is it a vast difference?
It's measurable in dozens and hundreds, yeah.
Dozens and hundreds of what?
Patients.
But in terms of doctors per head, we don't know the ratio. You don't know the ratio, is that right?
I don't have it to hand.
Okay.
No.
How would we pay for these extra doctors?
By efficiencies. There are huge efficiencies to be had in the health service. You talk to people on the front line, you talk to administrators. I was talking to an administrator in the queue in Asda the other day, and she sees huge inefficiencies in the area that she is working in. And the money is there if it's used more efficiently. In fact, that is true of the entire operation of the Northern Ireland Executive. More efficiencies. Do you know that...
But are we talking, just so I get my head around this, are we talking about hundreds more doctors being recruited in Northern Ireland?
No, we're talking about dozens of doctors, which would make a significant difference. Efficiencies, by the way, the Office of National Statistics, and this is in a recent report from Deloitte called The State of the State, suggests that if we achieved a 1% efficiency in the public sector, that would be a saving of £64 million per annum to the Northern Ireland Executive. Now, in the current austere times, that's big bucks.
You don't want prescription charges brought back to fund new cancer drugs. Why not?
That's not... No, I think you're twisting that a little bit. We do not want the sick to have to pay for the sick, and that's what we feel is going on in terms of the proposal to bring back prescription charges.
Here are the exact words in your manifesto. Continue to oppose the introduction of charges on the sick. That includes false-hearted attempts to predetermine a specialised drugs fund on the reintroduction reintroduction of prescription charges.
And we also say that all revenue raised through the pharmaceutical price regulation scheme would go towards ensuring patients with rare diseases are no longer last to receive revolutionary new treatments.
So you're opposed to prescription charges,
yes,
and you're opposed to prescription charges for specialised drugs funds like a cancer fund.
We don't think it is necessary to use prescription charges to fund what you're talking about.
Why not introduce prescription charges? What's wrong with it?
We think that it should be free at the point of delivery in terms of prescriptions.
What's wrong with wealthy people paying for their prescription?
It is the cost of administering the scheme. That's what's wrong with it.
Much is it?
Practically the same amount of money as you would raise.
And so would you fund this cancer drugs fund? I made a documentary on cancer a couple of months ago, and it's something that is very, very important to many families.
Yeah, we would use the PPR. We'd use the PPRS.
And that would be delivered by when, Mike? Well, a specialised drugs fund in Northern Ireland. Would there be any commitment?
The PPRS, as far as I can see it, we can start tomorrow.
Okay. Let's move on because we've got about 10 minutes. You would ensure that every school leaver has three essential options